welcome to the first of a new series that we're going to do at Radio Aryan called The Homeland Report. Now, in this series, what I'm hoping to do is interview nationalists from various parts of Europe and get their take on what's happening in their country, get a bit of an understanding of what's happening there, the invasion, the amount of people that are coming into their country, the amount of the third world hordes, what the general public feeling is against that, what the political parties are saying, what the resistance is, and what the general feeling is and the general support for nationalism and whether nationalism is rising. And what I hope to do is show that all the various European nations are facing the same threat. And we need to get some unity here. We need white nationalism like we've never needed it before. And we're going to start off today by looking at Hungary. Now, for reasons that should really be obvious, a lot of these interviews are going to be with people that would rather remain anonymous. So we'll refer to this Hungarian nationalist just as Berg, just as an anonymous name. So how are you doing today, Berg?
Thank you very much. I'm doing fine. And you?
Yeah, pretty good. I'm really glad that you agreed to make this, because Hungary has been in the news a lot, and there's a lot of support for Viktor Orban among the West, or among nationalists anyway, because he seems to be the only person that's actually speaking out against the invasion. And I know you're not too pleased with him, but maybe we can go into that a little bit later on. First of all, I'd like to get your impressions of the invasion of Hungary and what the effects of this has been, and just how large it has been, the actual invasion itself.
Well, the invasion of Hungary by the immigrants is pretty much over by now. It was quite big. Nobody knows the exact numbers, how many people came, but it's estimated to be hundreds of thousands. And it put a strain on Hungary's resources, because the migrants wanted to use Hungarian mass transportation and stuff. Hungary was a transit center, like thing, and the migrants used it as a station in their journey towards Western Europe. And the Hungarian government, and specifically the Fidesz party that is in power, wanted to let them through at first, but seeing the uproar and seeing that Jobbik, for example, Jobbik party, we can talk about it later, advocated that something has to be done, they built a fence which keeps them away.
So they were using the country, just passing through the country, and of course they got no attachment to the country, so they would be just trying to take whatever they can and causing uproar, as you say. I should imagine they expected to not have to pay for any of the transport as they were going through. And what sort of crimes were they committing as they were passing through?
They were stealing, looting, they engaged in violent acts against the population, like basic street vandalism and robbery and just senseless aggression, mainly. I mean, luckily they didn't plan to stay, so it wasn't much time, but everybody felt it, because the media gave an account of it.
So the general feeling was against these invading hordes. There wasn't much sympathy for them among the people then.
Yeah, definitely.
So you were aware that these people were just looking to take. They weren't fleeing a war zone or anything like that. This seems to be a different feeling among the public that you have there in Hungary than we have here in the West, where we had people with these placards saying "refugees welcome" and calling for more of them to be allowed in. But the Hungarian feeling was, we don't want this. We need to prevent them from coming in, and we need to defend ourselves from them. Yes.
Yes, those people whom you are mentioning in the West, like liberals and leftists, they are a negligible minority in Hungary. Definitely when it comes to this, but I would say in other respects as well.
Well, that's good. That's very inspiring and good to hear. So the way that it was dealt with was to build this fence. So can you tell us a bit more about this fence that we've heard so much about?
So the fence, basically what the Hungarian people wanted and what Jobbik wanted and said all along. And the fence was the idea of Jobbik, and all Orbán did was shamelessly copying it, but it worked. It keeps the invaders away. As a result, immigrant-induced violence is greatly reduced, and there are only a couple of thousand immigrants in Hungary as of now, mostly in refugee camps.
So it's been successful, but it wasn't actually Orbán's idea. It was Jobbik's idea, and he took that idea from them.
Yeah. Yes.
Ah, that's interesting. I know you've got some criticisms of Orbán as well. Do you want to say what these criticisms are that you've got of him?
A lot of people perceive that Orbán is basically building a feudal system where all the major political and economic and judiciary positions are occupied by his people. Fidesz had, Fidesz-Orbán Viktor's party, had 2/3 of the parliamentary seats in Hungary, which enabled them to nominate their people to all the positions that they wanted to fill, and this pretty much includes all public positions. All major positions are occupied by his people, while the middle class basically disappeared or is disappearing under the weight of austerity measures that the Orbán government enacted since 2010. And all what seems to remain are dispossessed subjects who depend on this new landlord class. Orbán's cronies and lackeys. Basically, all opposition groups agree on this. Even the leftists, even the liberals, even independents, even the so-called NGO type of people. What this means, in effect, that all money that comes from the EU goes to the cronies and lackeys of Orbán, and they are called the oligarchs. I mean, that's what people call them. And if you have connections to these people, all the gates will open to like career and jobs and whatever. And since the Orbán government came to power in 2010, more than 600,000 Hungarians have emigrated abroad. So it's an interesting thing that we are talking about immigration, whereas emigration is as big, if not bigger, problem than it. And a big portion, at least 30% of high schoolers, there were polls asking them, want to emigrate as soon as they get their diploma. And a lot of them say they don't want to come back in 10 years.
Well, that's a shame.
Yeah. Yeah, so in 2010, there was a chance and there was big hope that Orbán will do something positive after the disastrous socialist governments that ruled between 2002 and 2010. Now it's clear as day that Orbán squandered this opportunity. For just to provide a concrete example of the corruption of Orbán, he restricted the sale of tobacco products to so-called tobacco shops. There are approximately 5,000 of these shops, and 90% of them is connected to people who are close to Fidesz and Orbán. And only in these shops can you buy tobacco products like cigarettes, like tobacco to your pipe or whatever. And these shops can make fortunes since Hungarians smoke a lot. And
I was just going to say, so it's like he's got a monopoly. I mean, it's interesting that you've got these same austerity measures that are taking place elsewhere in Europe. But he's good on immigration, but on the other hand, he's implemented these austerity measures and is directly benefiting from having a monopoly, an oligarchic monopoly with the tobacco. Now, I'm sorry for interrupting there. Please continue, Bo.
Yes. To what you say, it's important to notice that a lot of people see as a, you know, compensation. So let's be tough on foreign politics for making up on the internal politics like this. So he's trying very hard to sell himself as a freedom fighter against Brussels. But he does pretty much everything they say when it comes to economic implementations or regulations. Now, it came out that Orbán is for TPP, you know, this transatlantic partnership thing. And the Obama government leaked it out that Hungary is very good partner in the TPP partnership agreement. And of course, it was a huge uproar against it.
But people
don't really care because there's a general apathy among the public because the majority of people are disillusioned with politics, partly exactly because of these things.
Well, one of the things that I also wanted to go into was what the effect has been of being part of the EU. So you're saying that there's been a huge drain of skilled people that are leaving the country to go to the West, and they're saying that they don't want to come back. So they're obviously then there's not much patriotism there among the young people, and that surprises me because I would have thought that after communism was lifted, that there would have been a rebound and that there would have been an inspiration of nationalism and patriotism. But you're saying that isn't evident and that people are leaving and saying that they don't want to come back. Is that right?
After communism, there was a huge chance of what you're saying, like a nationalistic rebirth. But it generally depends on that the communist structures, how resilient are they from the previous system? And in Hungary, the communist power structures remained to be very enduring. And as a result of that, some sort of nationalistic awakening did happen or has happened. But I think that at the end of the day, people want to just make a decent living. And the austerity measures are biting hard.
So there's more against the austerity measures than there are being against the immigration and the multiculturalism. Then you would say, would that be right, that people are more interested in stopping the austerity measures than preventing multiculturalism?
People are more interested to earn a decent wage than about the, you know, the big picture of things, because Hungarians are very nationalistic traditionally and generally. But a lot of people just, especially youngsters, just don't see the light anymore. Because, you know, the problem of Viktor Orban's government, one aspect of it is that everything is become state-owned. There is no discussion of Hungarian problems. All that is coming out of the TV are the victory reports of, like, you know, the GDP has increased against by 1.5% and stuff. And that's all what people hear. And of course, this doesn't count for much, right? But there's no other thing that they hear. And there's no public, really, there's no real public discourse what would make a politics worthwhile.
And what's the population like? Is there much diversity? Is it in the West, we keep having these diversity drives and diversity is great and we need to replace the white people. I mean, London is now only 40% white. So have you had a similar drive, a similar diversity drive over there in Hungary? And I'm talking separately from the hordes that were just passing through.
We had some, but, you know, I think people or politicians realize that diversity only works more or less if people have a decent wage, like they could get along. But, you know, when the immigrant takes your job, it's a wholly different situation, right? And Hungary was never really that rich or that well off as to afford a lot of immigrants to come in. So when it comes to minorities, Hungary has around 8 or 10% of gypsy population, which is a big problem in itself. And it's enough to deal with that.
Do they say that the gypsies are equal to the white people? Do they have this equality thing and the gypsies take advantage of that? Does that happen there?
There is not much anymore, because a few good things of the Orban government, that it cut a lot of benefits to the gypsies. So they now have to work mainly for the money they get, as in public works projects and stuff.
So they have to work to get their benefit money then?
Yeah, they have to work.
Oh, that's good.
they still get a lot of money after children, you know. Like, I'm sure there are benefits after children in England or wherever, so they get them here as well.
Well, I would have thought that if they were classed as Hungarian citizens, that they might try to make their way to the West where they would get better benefits. Have you seen a loss in gypsies? Have you seen them move to the West at all?
It's very interesting, because there was a huge influx of gypsies into Canada a few years ago, where they applied to refugee status, and they claimed without exception that they were oppressed in Hungary, and the Canadian government did a check and found nothing of the sort, so they put up huge billboards in Hungarian cities, the Canadian government, that if you apply for asylum and you're found out, then you will get to send home much, much sooner. And since then, the gypsy influx to Canada greatly diminished.
No, I wasn't aware of that. But what about the Muslim population? Hungary was under the Ottomans for a while, the Ottoman slavery, which I know was particularly harsh in Bulgaria. I suspect it was similarly harsh in Hungary. But what happened after the Ottomans left? Was there an uprising that got rid of the Ottomans? Did you defeat them, or was there Muslims left behind afterwards? What was the situation there? What happened there?
Basically, the Ottomans were driven out by the Habsburg emperors, who were part of the Holy Roman Empire, and they could get help from their their prince, dukes and principalities and bishops of the Holy Roman Empire. That's how Hungary become liberated. But as a side effect, the Habsburgs ruled by divide and conquer rule. So they settled in people foreign to Hungary, like people from the neighboring countries, because they knew that the more nationalities you have in one single country, to better you can play them against each other. The Ottomans were driven out by military force as a standard military operation. It started with the liberation of Buda in 1686. And by 1718, it was over. Hungary was, well, not really sovereign, but free from Turks.
Well, that must have been a great relief just to be free of the Turks.
Yeah. It was because the Turks employed an exploitative strategy. Like, they had these appointed bureaucrats who were only interested in getting the most of their subjects, because they could be replaced at any time. And of course, what you mentioned, hundreds of thousands of people were killed, were subjected to slavery and stuff. Basically, Hungary was a front line for 150 years. A constant front line.
The borderline between Christendom and Islamdom, I suppose.
Yes. Man's land.
So they were taking slaves, and people remained Christian. Were there some people that became Muslims and became turncoats and joined the other side?
It was negligible, I would say. Maybe the turncoats and the converts were a major factor in Bosnia, for example, but not really much anywhere else.
Oh, that's good. And Hungary is still a Catholic country. Is that right? A Catholic country is
when communism ended, there was a sort of a spiritual resurgence, but the effects of mass media and pornographic images and stuff, right?
So you're still you're getting all that demoralizing pornography and all the awful stuff that comes with the West. Has that come in since the fall of communism? Has it?
Yes, and it came with a vengeance, like nobody was prepared of the harmful effect that it presents. And very interesting that Orban poses and as a conservative, as a Christian, and they appointed all the peoples to the media authority, and nothing has happened to curtail their harmful influence and pornographic images that are shown in mass media since 2010.
So he hasn't done anything to stop that. So you're under the Ottomans for a century and a half. You understood the dangers of diversity and what the non-whites are like and the way that they treat people. And then the country was sort of freed up, but was still was under suzerainty to Austria. And then and then there was a First World War. In the Second World War, Hungary was allied with the Axis powers. Is that right?
Most definitely.
And then after that, at the end of the war, was it given to the Soviets? Did the Soviets invade? What happened there?
The Soviets invade because, the Romanians turned coat on the Germans. But the Hungarian case was found out in time, so Germans militarily occupied Hungary, which was pretty much an average thing. I mean, I don't think anyone has bad memories about it, as far as I can tell. But then the Soviet steamroller came and Hungary became a Soviet sphere of influence for 40 years.
Did they ship people off to the gulags? It sounds similar to what happened in the Baltic states. And the Germans came in and everything was okay. And then once at the end of the war, when the Soviets came in, they took revenge on the Baltic states for helping the Germans, and they deported loads of people to the gulags and imported lots of Russians and other ethnicities into the Baltic states to, as you say, to divide and conquer. So did something similar happen in Hungary?
They shipped away approximately 1 million people. They called Malenki robot, a little work, to the Soviet Union.
And then there was an uprising in 1956, which the West turned its back on and refused to help. Is that right?
So basically, just to give a general overview, communism consisted of two phases. The first was the Stalinist phase from 1948 to 1956. And then the people revolted. This revolution is unique in scale in world history. Basically, the whole country stood opposed to the communists. And after they struck it down bloodily, they sort of made a deal with the populace. They allowed some kind of private property and some very limited freedoms, but they sort of left the average Joe on its own. They sort of left people alone. And this deal corrupted the spirit of the Hungarian people because, in a sense, it was a deal with the devil. And relative prosperity under communism corrupted the spirit of the people.
Yeah, I can understand it did. I mean, that's really brave to rise up against them. The might of the Soviet Empire. It also rose up against the Ottomans. There's quite a spirit of wanting to be sovereign, I'd say, among the Hungarians. A fighting spirit.
Very strongly it lives in the heart of Hungarian people because since 1526, Hungary has never really been sovereign. And it was a constant desire in the people's hearts to be sovereign and independent and let us deal with our things, not others for us. Because whether it was the Turks, whether it was the Habsburg, whether it was the Soviets, it was never Hungarians.
So what happened with when the Iron Curtain fell, when the USSR collapsed? Well, what sort of happened around that time in Hungary?
In 1990, things looked good. Hungary was the most prosperous country in the Eastern Bloc. But during the transition from communism to capitalism, the communist economic and cultural elite retained relative power, and a lot of yesterday's communists became today's capitalists. Hence, the widespread corruption and the resignation in the heart of Hungarians.
So you had the same people running things, but they were just calling themselves capitalists now.
Yeah, they became feudal overlords instead of party secretaries.
Well, I think that sort of shows that there's very little difference between communism and capitalism, the way that we have it today. There was no strong ideology that they were clinging to. They were quite happy to become capitalists so long as they were getting paid and they were at the top.
Most definitely, yeah.
And what happened with the EU then? Did they sign up to join the EU and NATO after 1990?
Yeah, I mean, basically the elites wanted to herd Hungary to, you know, because there was this end of the history sentiment that communism has fallen. Now we are free. So let's join NATO and the EU because that will bring us prosperity. And Hungary joined NATO in 1998 and joined the EU in 2005. And there was a huge misleading of people that how we could benefit from joining the EU, and nothing of the sort happened.
So you were told a pack of lies about the EU. Were you told that it was going to be a trade organization and then it actually ended up giving its sovereignty away? That's what happened in Britain. We were told it was going to be just a trade organization and without us realizing it, they took over all our powers to make our own laws and to impose our own taxes. Was it something similar like that?
There wasn't any kind of public discussion that I remember of the sort. I mean, some people may felt it that way, but it wasn't articulated. Only by fringe elements that were so-called, quote-unquote, fringe elements that were excluded from this discourse.
So you look to the West after the fall of the USSR. You look to the West and look to the EU and NATO. So what are the feelings towards Russia now and towards Putin especially?
There are very positive sentiments among the Hungarian people when it comes to Putin, because everybody sees that Putin. Regained Russia's sovereignty by sending the oligarchs to prison, although in some cases it was merely a change from the anti-Putin oligarch to the Putin oligarch. But basically, Putin is the strong man of Russia, and people are generally sympathetic to that.
So they don't appear to bear a grudge against the Russians for communism. How aware are the Hungarians about the Jewish role in communism, and what role do the Jews play in Hungary?
There were two communist systems in Hungary. One was in 1919. It was called the Committee Republic. And the other was from 1948. And in the first attempt, it lasted for 133 days. And out of the 20 or so major commissars, 19 was of Jewish extraction. And this pretty much sealed the deal for the Hungarian people. This event is called the Rat Revolution in nationalist circles.
That's a good name for it.
And since 1948, the four leading functionaries of the Communist Party, Mátyás Rákosi, Ernő Gerő, Mihály Farkas, and József Révai, were all of Jewish extraction. And there was a joke in the 50s that what's the difference between the government in Budapest and the government in Tel Aviv? That the government of Tel Aviv has one Arab member too.
What is it like now then? Have you still got lots of Jews in power now in the government, or have they left Hungary to find somewhere that's got more wealth that they can plunder?
The thing is that during World War II, most of the Jewish communities were like dispersed or disposed of, or, you know. When it comes to the Budapest Jewish community, the so-called ghetto, when it came to that the Germans wanted to transport them away, Governor Horthy sent a tank battalion to the gates of the ghetto. When the Germans came, they just looked at it for a few hours and they went away. So the whole of the Jewish ghetto survived intact the Second World War, and they are with us ever since.
Are they claiming that they were holocausted and they need reparations from Hungary at all for the Second World War?
Yeah. It's you know, it comes with the territory.
Do they force the schools to go through Holocaust indoctrination lessons over there?
All the history books are rewritten as to suit their taste. And 2014 was designated a Holocaust memorial year by none other than Viktor Orban. So, and there was this movie lately, Son of Saul, and it is shown in movies free of charge to school children, as to, you know, they would have the proper impression of what happened at that time.
So they're rewriting history and putting it into their own movies to brainwash the kids into believing something different than to believing that the persecutor was the persecuted.
Pretty much.
Well, since the fall of the USSR, then there was a bit of a rebound, a bit of a nationalistic rebound, and a bit of a Christian rebound. Did the Soviets repress the churches at all underneath the Soviets?
Hungary was unique in the sense, and it's not a really pleasant thing to talk about, that here was a part of the church that was infiltrated by the communists, and it was called the Peace Church. And the priests of it were the peace priests. And the only thing where it ever gained root in the Eastern Bloc ever was China, the only other example of it. So the churches were pretty much subverted and infiltrated. But that ended in 1990. But the church never really faced up to this. like, you know, revealing who were the exact list of these peace priests. And the other thing is that in other countries there were laws against communist agents running for political office, and in Hungary there was no such law. And also the secret agents of the previous system, the communist system, were and still are not revealed to the public, like the snitches and the traitors who were spied on their own people.
So those records haven't yet been made public then, the records from the secret police of that time?
Yes. And one big thing about Jobbik is that they planned to reveal these names as soon as they got into power.
Well, that's good. And so was there a revival of the real Christian Church? Well, once the Soviets left, has there been? Because I know in Russia there's been a big revival of the Orthodox Church, and they got together and rebuilt one of the cathedrals that was destroyed by them. And now that they're allowed to be Christian again, they've got crucifixes and crosses everywhere, and pictures of Christ everywhere. And there's been a big Christian revival over there. Has anything like that happened in Hungary?
Not to that scale, but yeah, it happened. It was basically, you know, because the capital, Budapest, as I said, has always had this large Jewish presence, and pretty much the influence of Budapest emanates to the whole country. It was like, you know, this cosmopolitan, liberal, leftist atmosphere. So that's why it couldn't be as effective, as example, as you say, in Russia.
Right. And what about the nationalist revival then, after the Iron Curtain fell? Was there a revival in nationalism? Were there many nationalist groups that formed? Was there a presence of nationalism in the new government?
There was one major nationalist party that, seceded from the ruling party in the parliament. It was called the Party of Hungarian Justice and Life. And it had some moderate success, and basically the successor of this party is the Jobbik. There were pretty many grassroots organizations, but they couldn't really make a breakthrough to the mainstream political scene. Only Jobbik that he was able to make that breakthrough.
Are there any national socialist groups at all, or any parties that advocate national socialism now or back then?
The Hungarian equivalent of national socialism is called Hungarism. And it was represented by the Arrow Cross Party in the 1930s. And in that sense, there isn't much of a movement as far as I can see. I mean, there are certainly there are groups, and there are, you know, occasions and happenings, but I just don't see a mass Hungarist movement as per moment.
So Hungary had its own sort of national socialist movement, similar to what went on in Romania and Italy, or these fascist movements then back then.
Yeah, its own brand of national socialism, and you know, I wanted to say it is that the leitmotif of Hungarian history is perseverance, surviving against all odds. And as you know, the National Socialists greeted each other as Sieg Heil. The Hungarists greeted each other as saying perseverance.
I mean, you certainly persevered all this time and you still managed to keep your identity, even though you've had these oppressive groups try to strip the country of its identity. It's just such a shame that the people are leaving now for the West and don't appear to have this loyalty to their country anymore, because it appears like the Hungarian people had a real longing just to be a nation and to have their own land in the past. So what do you think has caused this loss of feeling in that in the young people? Do you think it's just the temptation of the trinkets and the baubles of the West and the more money that they can get?
Yeah, most definitely. Because even those who leave Hungary leave it with a heavy heart. That I am sure of.
And so you say that most of the immigration has been stopped now, and the fence has stopped this. Also, Orbán has been saying that he's not going to accept quotas of the refugees, because Merkel has been saying that the various European countries all have to accept a quota of refugees, and Orbán is saying no, we're not going to have that. So you think he's going to stick with that, and you're not going to end up having more of these creatures forced upon you?
Yeah, he made his statements bind him, as you know, pretty much. So I don't have illusions about Viktor Orban, but I know that he made enough statements that if he indeed does it, as you say, he'll be, you know, chased out of office in a week. So yeah, I think he'll stick to it.
And is Hungary part of I'm trying to remember whether Hungary was part of this anti-immigration bloc that was formed with a few countries there in Eastern Europe. Was Hungary one of them?
Yeah, it was. You know, it's part of the typical two-facedness of Viktor Orban, that on one hand he's part of the anti-immigration bloc and on the other hand he's for the TPP.
Yeah, I don't know much about this Trans-Pacific Partnership. Can you explain a bit about that and what it entails and why he's a part of it?
Well, what I know of it is that it tends to dismantle national sovereignties by giving unlimited power to corporations and to corporate law. Like, basically, corporate products will be the uttermost importance in this new order of things. And sovereign nation states, if there were any, now they will be completely helpless against this kind of stuff. So it's free trade, it's all for the corporations, all for the companies, and nothing for the nation states.
So it's like NAFTA and the EU, and there are various other groupings like this, yeah. Transnational groupings.
Yeah, I mean, the EU has an opposition against this because the EU protects its own products against American ones. So all the more incredible that Viktor Orban is for this TPP stuff, right? I mean, it completely defies belief, but that is what he's doing.
How well are Jobbik doing then? Yeah, we've heard a lot about Jobbik and about them being anti-Jew and anti-immigration, and then it came out that they were actually pro-Muslim and wanted an alliance with the Muslims. So how well are Jobbik doing, and what are their actual positions on those things?
The Muslim thing was basically Vona Gábor or Gábor Vona's pet project, where he got in his mind to build up good relations with Turkey, because Turkey has a good export market and good market in general, where Hungarian goods can find customers. So they went there and he held speeches at universities when he underlined this tyrannism conception, the Turanism conception is that the ancestors of Hungarians, the ancestors of Turkish, lived together or at least besides each other in an ancient homeland somewhere in Central Asia. And of course, the Turkish rule over has overwritten this 1,000 times, right? So it's like, you know, no matter how Germans and English are of the same branch, they still fought two world wars against each other, right? So it doesn't really count for much in that respect. But he advocated this idea to win Turkish sympathy and to build trade relations. I don't think that anyone in Hungary takes it really seriously that we have to do anything with Turks as they are today.
It was based on economic concerns and trying to get more money for Hungary rather than wanting to see alliance between them. I mean, because after the way you've been treated by the Turks, enslaved by them, basically, you would have thought that that would have been the last thing that he would have wanted to do, would be to turn his back on that and start welcoming them. And what we've got at the moment with Europe, they're saying, you know, that they want to give the Turks lots of money and give them free visas to come into Europe. And you would have thought that Hungary would have been one of the countries speaking out against that after being enslaved by them. So is there much anti-Muslim feeling over there in Hungary?
We can say that there is certainly some anti-Muslim sentiment. I mean, if we talk about, you know, like plots against mosques or bombings, there is no such thing. But the average guy certainly is antagonistic towards Muslims, I would say.
Yeah, I bet. Is there a large population of Muslims there? What are they percentage-wise?
Like a few tens of thousands. Most basically, or at most.
So it's not actually that many then of them.
I mean, not at all. They are basically invisible.
Oh, that's good. So would you say that most of the population is white then in Hungary still?
As I said, at approximately 8 to 10% of the population is Gypsy. But apart from that, yeah, and the Gypsy presence can be felt pretty much everywhere across Hungary, sadly.
It's pretty good to still be 90% white. If you look at the West or what's happening there, I mean, that's rapidly changing, especially with Germany importing a million of these Muslims and all the Turks that are there in Germany as well. Is there much of a racial feeling in Hungary? Much of a sense of being part of the wider white race and the racial brothers in throughout the rest of the world, America, Canada, Australia, and Europe, the other nations? Is there a feeling of white nationalism among Hungarians?
You think it's very interesting questions because for the most part throughout our history, Hungary has been pretty closed in. Like there is a Latin saying that extra Hungariam non est vita, si est vita non est ita, which means outside Hungary there is no life, and if there is life, is no such life. So every Hungarian thinks about himself first and foremost as a Hungarian, basically second as a Christian and third as white. So Hungarian nationalism is very, very strong in this respect, but I think everyone can see that Hungarians are just as white as, you know, any other white nation. So I think racial feeling is beginning to get stronger and stronger, especially that we see that European countries are fighting the migrant wave as well. So there's much sympathy for them, and I think that strengthens racial ties between the nations.
And you say, you were saying there about the, what Gabor Vanar was saying about the Hungarians originally being brother nation to the Turks or whatever. I think this goes back, I mean, the Turks are obviously mongrelized now. They're a yeah. mongrel race, but that actual part there, of Asia and the Near East, that was originally where the white farmers came from, according to, the latest research that's been done. That's where white people spread out from in the first place, was that yeah. area. So yeah. Hungarians would have been one of the original white tribes from then that have managed to keep their separateness and their uniqueness. Yeah. So was that what Gabor Vanar was referring to then, do you think? Was that
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, there were, you know, traces, there are still, like, archaeologically traces of whites all over Asia. Like, even back in back as far as Mongolia, you can find white traces, like, you know, mummies and, you know, that stuff. And in that sense, it is very well may have been at some point that the ancestors of the Turks and the Hungarians lived next to each other, or were some blood relations as well. Yeah, definitely. But as you say, the Turks become Arabized so much, and, you know, Arab basically means mixed, right?
Yeah.
So maybe the ruling class or some traces, you can find some white remains in Turkey as recent as today if you search carefully. But it's just not the general characteristic anymore.
And what about the language? Because isn't the Hungarian language different to all the other languages? They can't work out where it came from. Is that right, or am I thinking of someone else?
You are very, yeah, very much right, because there was this thing of the Finno-Ugrian relationship, that the Hungarian supposedly came from Finno-Ugrian, but much of this research was based on unscientific methods and is widely discredited, especially in nationalist circles today in Hungary. So I think nobody really knows where the Hungarian language came from.
Was that Finno-Ugritic? Was that linked to Finland, or is that something completely different?
It has some very distant relationship with Finnish and Finno-Ugrian, but the bulk of the dictionary has nothing to do with either Finnish or Finno-Ugrian.
So they just can't work out where it came from.
We have these very distant relationships, but they just can't seem to have any connection to them apart from the theory that, you know, maybe we were in connection with all of them, or maybe all those people learned Hungarian or part of it from us. So these are the competing theories. In this respect, some people say that Hungarian is the predominant ancient language of the world. I mean, I don't necessarily subscribe to it. I'm just saying that there are these theories.
Okay, well, I think we've learned a lot about Hungary here, Berg. I think that you've done really well here. I mean, this has been fascinating. I hope the listeners find it as interesting as I have. So thank you very much for coming on here and agreeing to do this. And hopefully we'll have some more homeland reports in the future. If anyone would like to talk about their country and what's happening to it and a bit about the history of it so that we can learn more about our white brothers, then please do get in touch with me. Drop a line to stormersubs@hushmail.com or come into the chat room let us know so that we can make a program with you as well. So thanks for coming on, Berg, and thank you, listeners, for listening. We do hope you'll tune in again next time.